Whatever it is, no. We entered a kitchen where I found Sir Stuart already present, his arms folded, leaning back against a wall with a quiet smile as he watched. Mort went to a large cookie jar, opened it, and took out a single Oreo before replacing the lid. "Morty, come on. It's never been like that," I said. "I've come to ask your help a couple of times because you're a capable professional and—"
"Bullshit," Mort snapped, spinning to face me, his eyes flashing. "Dresden came to me when he was so desperate he might as well try any old loser."
I winced. His summation of our relationship was partially true, but not entirely.
"Morty, please."
"Morty what?" he snapped back. "You've got to be kidding me. I am not getting involved in whatever international crisis you mean to perpetrate next."
"It's not like I've got a lot of choice in the matter, man. It's you or no one. Please, just hear me out."
He barked out an incredulous little laugh.
"No, you hear me out, Shade. No means no. It isn't happening. It isn't ever going to happen. I said no."
And then he slammed the door to the next room in my face.
"Damn it, Morty,"
I snarled, and braced myself for the plunge through his door after him.
"Dresden, stop,"
Sir Stuart said. Too late. I slammed my nose and face into the door and fell backward onto my ass like a perfect idiot. My face began to throb immediately, swelling with pain that felt precisely normal, identical to that of any dummy who walked into a solid oak door.
"Op," Sir Stuart finished.
He sighed and offered me a hand up. I took it, and he hauled me to my feet.
"Ghost dust mixed into the paint inside the room," he explained. "No spirit can pass through it."
"I'm familiar with it," I muttered, and felt annoyed that I hadn't thought of the idea before, as an additional protection against hostile spirits at my own apartment. To the beings of the immaterial, ghost dust was incontrovertible solidity. Thrown directly at a ghost, it would cause tremendous pain and paralyze it for a little while, as if the spook had been suddenly loaded down with an incredible and unexpected weight. If I'd put it all over my walls, it would have turned them into a solid obstacle to ghosts and their ilk, shutting them out with obdurate immobility. Of course, my recipe had used depleted uranium dust, which would have made it just a tad silly to spread around the interior of my apartment. Not that it mattered. My apartment was gone, taken when a Molotov cocktail, hurled by a vampire assassin, had burned the boarding house to the ground, along with most of my worldly possessions. Only a few had been left, hidden away. God knew where they were now. I suppose I couldn't really count that as a loss, all things considered. Material possessions aren't much use to a dead man. I lifted a hand to my nose, wincing and expecting to find it rebroken. No such thing had happened, though a glob of some kind of runny, transparent, gelatinous liquid smeared the back of my hand. Hell's bells! I'm bleeding ectoplasm? That drew a smile from the late Marine.
Ghosts generally do. You'll have to forgive him, Dresden. He can be very slow to understand things at times.
I don't have time to wait for him to catch on, I said. I need his help. Sir Stuart grinned some more.
You aren't going to get it by standing there repeating yourself like a broken record. Repeating yourself like a broken record. Repeating yourself like a broken...
Ha, ha, I said without enthusiasm. People who cared about me are going to get hurt if I can't act. Sir Stuart pursed his lips.
It seems to me that if your demise was to leave someone vulnerable, something would have happened to them already. It's been 6 months, after all.
I felt my jaw drop open.
What? 6 months?
The ghost nodded.
Today is the 9th of May, to be precise.
I stared at him, flabbergasted. Then I turned, put my back against Morty's impenetrable door, and used it to stay upright as I sank to the ground.
6 months?
Yes.
That's not...
I knew I was just gabbling my stream of thought, but I couldn't seem to stop myself from talking.
That's not right. It can't be right. I was dead for less than a freaking hour. What kind of Rip Van Winkle bullshit is this?
Sir Stuart watched me, his expression serious and untroubled. Time has little meaning to us now, Dresden, and it's very easy to become unattached to it. I once lost 5 years listening to a Pink Floyd album.
There is snow 1.5 feet deep on the ground, I said, pointing in a random direction. In May?
His voice turned dry. The television station Mortimer watches theorizes that it is due to person-made global climate change. I was going to say something insulting, maybe even offensive, but just then the rippling sound of metallic wind chimes tinkled through the air. They were joined seconds later by more and more of the same, until the noise was considerable.
"What's that?" I asked.
Sir Stuart turned and walked back the way we'd come, and I hurried to follow. In the next room over, a dozen sets of wind chimes hung from the ceiling. All of them were astir, whispering and singing, even though there was no air moving through the room. Sir Stuart's hand went to his axe, and I suddenly understood what I was looking at. It was an alarm system.
"What's happening?" I asked him.
"Another assault," he said. "We have less than 30 seconds. Come with me."
Chapter 5
"To arms!" bellowed Sir Stuart. "They're coming at us again, lads!"
The ringing of the alarm chimes doubled as figures immediately exploded from the very walls and floor of the ectomancer's house, appearing as suddenly as, well, as ghosts.
Duh.
1 second, the only figures in sight were me and Sir Stuart. The next, we were striding at the head of a veritable armed mob. The figures didn't have the same kind of sharp-edged reality that Sir Stuart did. They were wispier, foggier. Though I could see Sir Stuart with simple clarity, viewing the others was like watching someone walk by on the opposite side of the street during a particularly heavy rain. There was no specific theme to the spirits defending Mort's house. The appearance of each was eclectic, to such an extent that they looked like the assembled costumed staff from some kind of museum of American history. Soldiers in the multicolored uniforms of regulars from the Revolutionary War walked beside buckskin-clad woodsmen, trappers, and Native Americans from the wars preceding the Revolution. Farmers from the Civil War era stood with shopkeepers from the turn of the 20th century. Men in suits, some armed with shotguns, others with Tommy guns, moved toward the attack, the bitter divisions of the era of Prohibition apparently forgotten. Doughboys marched with a squad of buffalo soldiers, followed by 6 genuine 6-gun-toting cowboys in long canvas coats, and a group of grunts whose uniforms placed them as Vietnam-era U.S. Army infantry.
"Huh," I said. "There's something you don't see every day."
Sir Stuart drew his gun from his belt as he strode forward, checking the old weapon.
"I've seen a great many years in this city, many, many nights. Until recently, I would have agreed with you."
I looked back at Sir Stuart's little army as we reached the front door and passed through it.
God damn it, that feels strange. Guess that means you're seeing a pattern.
"This is the 5th night running that they've come at us," Sir Stuart replied as we went out into the porch. "Stay behind me, Dresden, and well clear of my axe arm."
He came to a halt a step later, and I stood behind him a bit on his left side. Sir Stuart, who had been a giant for his day, was only a couple of inches shorter than me. I had to strain to see over him. The street was crowded with silent figures. I just stared out at them for a moment, struggling to understand what I was looking at. Out on the road were scores, maybe even a couple of 100 wraiths like the one Sir Stuart had dispatched earlier. They were flabby, somehow hollow and squishy-looking, like balloons that hadn't been filled with enough gas. Sad, frightening, humanoid figures, their eyes and mouths gaping too large, too dark, and too empty to seem real. But instead of advancing toward us, they simply stood there in even ranks, leaning forward slightly, their arms held vaguely upward as if yearning toward the house. Though their hands seemed limp and devoid of strength, their fingers trailing into shapeless shreds. The horrible sound of hundreds of nearly silent moans of pain emanated from the block of wraiths, along with a slowly building edge of tension.
"Tell me, wizard,"
Sir Stuart said.
What do you see?
A crap ton of wraiths, I breathed quietly, which I do not know how to fight.
None of them had the deadly, focused look of Sir Stuart and his crew, but there were a lot of them out there. Something is getting them worked up.
Ah, he said. He glanced back over his shoulder at me, his eyes narrowed.
I thought your folk had clear sight.
I frowned at him, and then out at the small sea of wraiths. I stared and stared, bringing the focus of concentration I'd learned over endless hours of practice in my studies, and suddenly saw them. Dark, slithering shapes, moving up and down the ranks of wraiths at the backs of their lines. They looked vaguely like folk covered in dark, enveloping cloaks and robes, but they glided through the air with a silent, effortless grace that made me think of sharks who had scented blood in the water and were closing in to feed.
4, 5, 6 of them, I said, in the back ranks.
Good, said Sir Stuart, nodding his approval. That's the real foe, lad. These poor wraiths are just their dogs.
It had been a long, long time since I'd felt quite this lost.
What are they?
Lemurs, he said, with the Latin pronunciation, lemurs. Shades who have set themselves against Providence and given themselves over to malice and rage. They do not know pity, nor restraint, nor fear, I guessed. They always never know fear.
Sir Stuart glanced over his shoulder and bounced his long-handled axe against his palm, his mouth turned up into an edged, wolfish grin.
Nay, lad, perhaps they were innocent of it once, but they proved quick learners when they raised their hands against this house.
He turned back to face the street and called out,
"Positions!"
The spirits who had come along behind us flowed around and over us, and though I twitched when I saw it, beneath us. Within seconds they were spread into a defensive line in the shape of a half-dome between the house and the gathered wraiths and lemurs. Then those silent forms stood steady, whether their feet were planted on the ground or in thin air or somewhere just below the ground, and faced the small horde with their weapons in hand. The tension continued to build, and the seething, agonized gasps of the wraiths grew louder.
I said as my heart started picking up the pace. What do I do?
Nothing, Sir Stuart replied, his attention now focused forward. Just stay near me and out of my way.
But I can see you were a fighter, boy, Stuart said, his voice harsh. But now you're a child. You've neither the knowledge nor the tools you need to survive.
He turned and gave me a ferocious glare, and an unseen force literally pushed my feet back across 5 or 6 inches of porch. Holy crap. Stuart might not be a wizard, but obviously I had a thing or two to learn about how a formidable will translated to power on the spooky side of the street.
Stay close to me, the Marine said, and shut it.
I swallowed, and Sir Stuart turned back to the front.
You don't have to be a dick about it, I muttered, very quietly.
It bothered me that he was right. Without Sir Stuart's intervention, I'd have been dead again already.
That's right, you heard me.
Dead again already. I mean, come on. How screwed up is your life, after or otherwise, when you find yourself needing phrases like that? I indulged myself in half a second of disgust that once again the universe seemed to be making an extra special effort to align itself against me, but it was my pride that was in critical condition. I was accustomed to being the guy who did the fighting and protecting. Fear had been fuel for the fire, meat and potatoes, when I was the one calling the shots. But now, this was terror of an alien vintage. I was helpless. Without warning, the air filled with whistling and ear-slashing shrieks, and the horde of wraiths washed toward us in a flash flood of strangled moans.
"Give it to them, lads!"
Sir Stuart bellowed, his voice rising above the cacophony of screams with the silvery clarity of a trumpet. Spectral gunfire roared out at once from the weapons of the hovering defenders. Again, clouds of powder smoke were replaced with bursts of colored mist. Bullets had been switched out for streaking spheres of violent radiance. Instead of the explosions of propellant and projectiles breaking the sound barrier, hammering bass note thrums filled the air and echoed on long after a gunshot would have faded. A tide of destruction swept over the assaulting wraiths, distorted light and sound tearing great, ragged holes in them, filling the air with faded, warped shadow images as their feeble memories bled into wisps of cloud that were swallowed by the night. They fell by the dozens, and there were still plenty more wraiths left to go around. Wraiths closed in with the Lindquist Historical Home Defense Society, and it still wasn't fair. Sir Stuart's troops reacted like the fighting men they had once been. Swords and sabers appeared, along with stilettos and brass knuckles and bowie knives. The wraiths came at them with a slow, graceful, terrible momentum and were hacked, stabbed, punched, clubbed, and otherwise broken. But there were a lot of wraiths. I heard a hollow scream that sounded as if it had come from a couple of blocks away, and lifted my eyes to see half a dozen wraiths who had all attacked together swarm over a phantom doughboy, a scrawny young man in a baggy uniform. Though one of the things was literally opened from one side to the other by a slash of the ghost soldier's bayonet, the other five just fastened onto him, first by a single fingertip, which was then blindly followed by others. Another wraith expired when the young soldier drew his knife. But then all those tattered fingers began winding and winding around him, lengthening impossibly, until within a few seconds he looked like nothing so much as a massive burn victim covered in heavy, dirty bandages. The wraiths pressed closer and closer, their flabby bodies compressing until they hardly resembled human forms at all. And then, with a sudden scream, they darted away in four different directions as more solid, lethal-looking shapes, leaving behind the translucent outline of a young man screaming in agony. I watched, my stomach twisting, as even that image faded. Within seconds, it was gone.
"Damn their empty eyes," Sir Stuart said, his teeth clenched. "Damn them."
"Hell's bells," I breathed. "Why didn't... couldn't you have stopped them?"
"The lemurs," he spat. "I can't give them the chance to get by me into the house."
I blinked. "But the threshold, they can't."
"They did the first night," he said. "Still don't know how. I can't leave the porch, or they'll get through. Now be quiet."
His fingers flexed and settled on the haft of his axe.
"Here's where we come to it."
As the wraiths continued to assault and entangle the house's defenders, Sir Stuart moved to the top of the little stairs leading up to the porch and planted his feet. Out at the street, the shadowy forms of the lemurs had all gone still, each of them hunched down in a crouch, predators preparing to spring. When it came fast. Not fast like the rush of a mountain lion upon a deer, and not even fast like a runaway automobile. They were fast like bullets. One second the lemurs were at the street, and the next they were in the air before the porch, seemingly without crossing the space between. I didn't have time to do more than yelp and go into a full-body twitch of pure, startled reaction. But Sir Stuart was faster. The first lemur to charge met the butt of Sir Stuart's axe, a blow that sent it into a fluttering backward tailspin. The second and third lemurs charged at almost exactly the same moment, and Sir Stuart's axe swept out in a scything arc, slashing them both and sending them reeling with high-pitched, horrible screams. The fourth lemur drove a bony, wristed punch across Sir Stuart's jaw, staggering the marine and driving him to one knee. But when the lemur tried to follow up the attack, Stuart produced a gleaming knife from his belt, and it flashed in opalescent colors as he swept it in a treacherous diagonal slash over the thing's midsection. The fifth lemur hesitated, seeming to abort its instantaneous rush about halfway across the yard. Stuart let out a bellow and threw the knife. It struck home, and the lemur frantically twisted in upon itself, howling like the others, until the knife tumbled free of its ghostly flesh and fell to the snowy ground. Five wounded lemurs fled from Sir Stuart, screaming. The sixth crouched on the sidewalk, frozen in indecision.
"Coward,"
Stewart snarled.
If you can't finish, don't start.
All things considered, I thought, Stewart might be being a little hard on the thing. It wasn't cowardly to not rush a juggernaut when you'd just seen your buddies get thrashed by it. Maybe the thing was just smarter than the others. I never got a chance to find out. In the space of an instant, Sir Stewart crossed the lawn to the final lemur. Only his rush ended not in front of his foe, but 6 feet past it. The lemur jerked in the twisting, surprised reaction I had just engaged in a moment before. Then its head fell from its shoulders, hood and all, dissolving into flickering memory embers as it went. Its headless body went mad, somehow letting out a scream, thrashing and kicking and falling to the ground, where gray and white fire poured from its truncated neck. A shout of triumph went up from the home's defenders as they continued their own fight, and the suddenly listless wraiths began to be torn apart in earnest, the tide of battle shifting rapidly. Sir Stewart lifted his axe above his head in response and turned to almost casually step up behind the wraith and take its head from its shoulders with the axe. Then, in the street, about 10 feet behind him, a figure, one every bit as solid and real as Sir Stewart himself, appeared out of nowhere, a form shrouded in a nebulous gray cloak with eyes of green-white fire. It lifted what looked like a clawed hand and sent a bolt of lightning sizzling into Sir Stewart's back. Sir Stewart cried out in sudden agony, his body tightening helplessly, muscles convulsing just as they would on an electrocuted human being. The bolt of lightning seemed to attach itself to his spine, then burned a line down to his right hip bone, burning and searing and blowing bits of the tattered, flaming substance of his ghostly flesh into the air.
No!
I screamed as he fell. I started running toward him. The Marine rolled when he hit the ground and came up with that ridiculously huge old horse pistol in his hand. He leveled it at the gray ghost and fired, and once again his gun sent out a plume of ethereal color and a tiny bright sun of destruction. But the cloudy gray figure lifted its hand, and the bullet bounced off the air in front of it smoothly, catching a luckless, wounded wraith who had been attempting to retreat. The wraith immediately dissolved as the first one had, and Sir Stewart stared up at the gray ghost with his mouth open in shock. Magic. The gray ghost was using magic. Even as I ran forward, I could feel the humming energy of it in the air. Smell it on the cold breeze coming off the lake. I didn't move at ghostly super speed. I mostly just ran across the hard ground, hurtled the little fence, went right through a car parked on the street, ow, grr, and threw my best haymaker of a right cross at a point I nominated to be the gray ghost's chin. My fist connected with what felt like solid flesh, a refreshingly familiar smack thump of impact that immediately flashed red pain through my wrist to the elbow. The gray ghost reeled, and I didn't let up. I put a couple of left hooks into its midsection, gave it one hell of an uppercut with my right hand, and drove a hard reverse punch into its neck. I am not a skilled martial artist, but I know a little. Picked up in training with Murphy and some of the other SI cops over the years at Dojo's Hurricane Gym. Real fighting is only slightly about form and technique. Mostly it's about timing, and about being willing to hurt somebody. If you know more or less when to close the distance and throw the punch, you're most of the way there. But having the right mindset is even more important. All the technique in the world isn't going to help you if you come to the fight without the will to wreak havoc on the other guy. The gray ghost staggered back, and I kicked one leg out from under it as it went. It fell. I started kicking it as hard as I could, screaming, driving my toe into its ribs and back, then switching to move in and stomp at its head with the heel of my heavy hiking boot. I did not let up, not even for a second. If this thing could pull out more magic, it would deal with me as easily as it had Sir Stewart. So I focused on trying to crush the enemy's skull and kept kicking.
"Help me!"
snarled the gray ghost. There was a flash of blue light, and what felt like a wrecking ball made from foam rubber mattresses smashed into my chest. It threw me back completely through the car again.
Hell spells, ow.
and I landed on my back with stars in front of my eyes, unable to remember how to inhale. A nearby wraith turned its empty-eyed head toward me, and a surge of fear sent me scrambling to my feet. I got up in time to see the gray ghost rising as well, and those burning green-white eyes met mine. In the air behind the ghost floated a skull. A skull with cold blue flames flickering in its empty eye sockets.
"You've got to be kidding me," I whispered.
"Bob?"
"You,"
the ghost hissed. Its hands formed into arching claw-like shapes, and it hissed in rage and in fear. Click-clack went the hammer of Sir Stuart's gun. The gray ghost let out a scream of frustration and simply flew apart into thousands of tiny wisps of mist, taking the floating skull along with it. The wisps swarmed together into a vortex like a miniature tornado, and streaked down the road and out of sight, leaving 100 voices screaming 100 curses in its wake. I looked around. The last of the wraiths were dying or had fled. The house's defenders, most of them wounded and bleeding pale ectoplasm and flickering memory, were still in their positions. Sir Stuart was holding one hand to his side, and with the other the pistol pointed at the empty air where the gray ghost had been.
"Oh," he said, sagging once it became clear that the fight was over. "Bloody hell, that's going to leave a mark."
I moved to his side.
"Are you okay, man?"
"Aye, lad, aye. What the hell were you trying to do? Get yourself killed?"
I glowered at him and said, "You're welcome. Glad I could help."
"You nearly got yourself destroyed," he replied. "Another second and that creature would have blasted you to bits."
"Another second and you'd have put a bullet in its head," I said. Sir Stuart idly pointed the gun at me and pulled the trigger. The hammer fell with a flash of sparks as flint struck steel, and nothing happened.
"You were bluffing?" I asked.
"Aye," Sir Stuart said. "'Tis a muzzle-loading pistol, boy. You have to reload them like a proper weapon."
Idly, he reached out a hand toward the last remnants of a deceased wraith, and flickers of light and memory flowed across the intervening space and into his fingertips. When he had it all back, Sir Stuart sighed and shook his head, seeming to recover a measure of strength.
"Very well, then, lad. Help me up."
I did so. Sir Stuart's midsection on the right side was considerably more translucent than before, and he moved as if it pained him.
"When will they be back?" I asked him.
"Tomorrow night, by my reckoning," he said. "With more. Last night they had 4 lemurs along. Tonight it was 6. And that's 7th.
He shook his head and started reloading the pistol from the powder horn he carried on a baldric at his side.
"I knew something stronger had to be gathering all those shades together, but I never considered a sorcerer."
He finished reloading the weapon, put the ramrod back into its holder, and said,
"Pass me my axe, boy."
I got it for him and handed it over. He slipped its handle through a ring on his belt and nodded,
"Thank you."
A thumping sound made me turn my eyes back toward the house. A man, burly, wearing a dark hooded sweater and old jeans, was holding a long-handled crowbar in big, blocky hands. He shoved one hand into the space between the door and the frame, and with a practiced, powerful motion, popped the door from its frame and sent it swinging open. Without an instant's hesitation, Sir Stuart fired. So did the house's spectral defenders. A hurricane of ghostly power hurtled down upon the man and passed harmlessly through him. Hell, the guy looked like he hadn't noticed anything at all.
"A mortal," Sir Stuart breathed.
He took a step forward, let out a sound of pain, and clutched at his side. His teeth were clenched, his jaw muscles standing out sharply.
"Dresden," he gasped. "I cannot stop a mortal man. There is nothing I can do."
The hooded intruder took the crowbar into his left hand and drew a stubby revolver from his sweater with his right.
"Go," Stuart said. "Warn Mortimer. Help him."
I blinked. Mortimer had made it clear that he didn't want to get involved with me, and some childish part of my nature wanted to snap that turnabout was fair play. But a wiser, more rational part of me reminded my inner child that without Mort, I might never be able to get in touch with anyone else in town.
I might never find my own killer. I might never be able to protect my friends. And besides, you don't just let people kick down other people's doors and murder them in their own home. You just don't. I clapped Stuart on the shoulder and sprinted back toward the little house and its little owner. Chapter 6. The gunman had a big lead on me, but I had an advantage he didn't. I'd already been inside the house. I knew the layout, and I knew where Mort was holed up. Oh, plus I could run through freaking walls. Granted, I think it would have been more fun to be Colossus than Shadowcat. But you take what you can get. And any day you've merely got the powers of an X-Man can't be all that bad, right? I gritted my teeth and plunged through the wall into Mort's kitchen and ran for the study, several steps ahead of the gunman.
Mort!
I shouted.
Mort, they brought a hitter with them this time! There's a gunman running around your house!
What? Demanded Mort's voice from the far side of the ghost-dusted door.
Where's Stuart? Damn it, Mort, he's hurt!
I called. There was a brief pause, and then Mort said, as if baffled,
How did that happen?
I was getting impatient.
Focus, Mort! Did you hear me? There's a freaking gunman loose in your house!
Real alarm entered his voice for the first time.
A what?
The gunman had heard Mort shouting at me. He came toward the door to the study, moving lightly for a big man. I got a better look at him and noted that his clothing was ragged and unwashed, and so was he. He stank, enough that it carried through to me, even given my condition, and his eyes were wide and wild, rolling around like those of a junkie who was hopped up on something that makes him pay too much attention to his surroundings. That didn't seem to have affected his gun hand, though. The semi-automatic he clutched in one big fist seemed steady enough to get the job done.
Mort! I called. He's coming toward your study door right now! Look, just get your weapon and aim at the door, and I'll tell you when to shoot.
I don't have one!
Mort screamed. I blinked.
You don't what?
I'm an ectomancer, not an action hero!
I heard him moving around in the office for a moment, and then he said,
They cut the phone!
The gunman let out a low, rumbling chuckle.
You are wanted, little man.
His voice sounded rotted, clotted, like something that hadn't been alive in a long time.
It is commanded. You can come with me and it won't hurt, or you can stay in there and it will.
Dresden?
Mort called.
What do I do?
Oh, now you want to talk to me, I said.
You're the one who knows about this mayhem bullshit!
Mort shrieked.
Can I count, little man? Said the gunman. Five?
Surviving mayhem is about being prepared, I shouted back. Little things like having a gun.
I'll get one in the morning!
Four.
Mort, there's gotta be something you can do, I said. Hell's bells, every time I run into a ghost, it's tried to rip my lungs out. You're telling me none of your spooks can do something?
They're sane,
Mort shouted back.
It's crazy for a ghost to interact with the physical world. Sane ghosts don't go around acting crazy.
Three,
chanted the gunman.
Go away,
Mort shouted at him.
There's got to be something I can do, I yelled.
I don't make the rules, okay,
Mort said.
The only way a ghost can manifest is if it's insane.
Two,
the gunman screamed, his voice rising to an excited pitch. I jumped in front of the lunatic and shrieked, Boo! I flapped my hands in his face as if trying to slap him left and right on the cheeks. Nothing happened.
Guess that was too much to hope for, huh?
Mort called lamely.
One,
the gunman purred. Then he leaned back and drove a heavy boot at the door. It took him three kicks to crack the frame and send the door flying inward. Mort was waiting on the other side of the door, a golf club in hand. He swung it at the gunman's head without any preamble, a grimly practical motion. The gunman put an arm up, but the wooden head of the club got at least partly around it, and he reeled back a pace.
This is your fault, Dresden!
Mort snarled, swinging the club again as he spoke. He hit the gunman full on in the chest, and then again in one big arm. The gunman caught the next blow on his forearm and swung wildly at Mort. He connected, and Mort got knocked on his can.
The gunman pressed one hand to a bleeding wound on his head and screamed a howl of agony that was somehow completely out of proportion with the actual injury. His wild eyes rolled again, and he lifted the gun to aim at the little man. I moved on instinct, throwing myself uselessly between the weapon and the ectomancer. I tripped on a fragment of the ghost dust-painted door and wound up falling in a heap on top of Mort and sunk into him. The world suddenly hit me in full technicolor. It was so dark in here. The gunman, an enormous threatening shadow standing over me. His voice was hideous and so loud that my ears ached. The stench, unwashed body and worse things, was enough to turn my stomach, filling my nose like hideous packing peanuts. I saw the gunman's hand tighten on the trigger, and I threw my arm up. My black-clad, thick, rather short arm.
Defendarius!
I barked faux Latin, the old defense spell I'd first learned from Justin DeMorn, my first teacher. I felt the magic surge into me, down through my arm, out into the air, just as the gun went off, over and over, as some kind of restraint in the gunman's head snapped. Sparks flew up from a shimmering blue plane that formed in front of my outspread fingers, bullets and fragments of bullets shattering and bouncing around the room. One of them stayed more or less in one piece and smacked into the gunman's calf, and he pitched abruptly to one side, still jerking the trigger until the weapon was clicking on empty. I felt my mouth move as Mort's voice, a voice that rang with resonance and authority I had seldom encountered before, said, "Get off of me!" If I'd been hurtled from a catapult, I don't think I'd have been thrown away any faster. I flew off at an upward angle and slammed painfully into the ghost dust-painted ceiling of the study. I bounced off it and fell to the equally hard floor. I lay there, stunned, for a second. The gunman got to his feet, breathing hard and fast, slobber shooting out from slack lips as he did. He picked up the golf club that had fallen from Mort's fingers and took a step toward him. Mort fixed hard eyes on the intruder and spoke, his voice ringing with that same unalterable authority.
"To me!"
I felt the tug of some sudden force, as subtle and inarguable as gravity, and I had to lean against it to stop myself from sliding across the floor toward him. Other spirits appeared, drawn in through the shattered door as if sucked into a tornado. Half a dozen Native American shades flew into Mort, and as the gunman swung the golf club, he let out a little yipping shout, ducked the swing more nimbly than any man his age and condition should have been able to, caught the gunman's wrist, and rolled backward, dragging the man with him. He planted his heels in the gunman's midsection and heaved, a classic fighting technique of the American tribes, and sent the man crashing into a wall. The gunman rose, seething, eyes entirely wild, but not before Mort had crossed the room and taken an ancient, worn-looking axe down from a rack attached to one wall. It took my stunned brain a second to register that the weapon looked exactly like the one Sir Stuart had wielded, give or take a couple of centuries.
"Stuart!"
Mort called, and his voice rang in my chest as if it had come from a bass-amplified megaphone. There was a flicker of motion, and then Sir Stuart's form flew in through the doorway, as if propelled by a vast wind, overlaying itself briefly onto Mort's far smaller body. The gunman swung the club, but Mort caught it with a deft, twisting move of the axe's haft. The gunman leaned into it, using his far greater weight and strength, in an attempt to simply overbear the smaller man and push him to the floor. But he couldn't. Mort held him off as if he'd had the strength of a much larger, much younger, much healthier man, or maybe men. He held the startled intruder stone still for the space of 5 or 6 seconds, then heaved, twisting with the full power of his shoulders, hips, and legs, and used the axe's head to rip the club from the intruder's paws. The gunman threw an enraged punch at his face, but Mort blocked it with the flat of the axe's head, and then snapped the blunt upper edge of the axe into the gunman's face with an almost contemptuous precision. The intruder reeled back, stunned, and Mort followed up with the instincts and will of a dangerous, trained fighting man.
He struck the intruder's knee with the weapon's haft, sending a sharp, crackling pop into the air, and swung the flat of the blade into the intruder's jaw as the bigger man began to fall. The blow struck home with a meaty thunk and another crackling noise of impact, and the gunman dropped like a proverbial stone. Mortimer Lindquist, ectomancer, stood over the fallen madman in a wary crouch, his eyes focusing on nothing as he turned his head left and right, scanning the room around him. Then he sighed and exhaled. The steel head of the weapon came down to thump gently against the floor. Shapes departed him, the guardian spirits easing free of him, most of them fading from view. Within a few seconds, the only shades present were me and an exhausted-looking Sir Stuart. Mort sat down on the floor heavily, his head bowed, his chest heaving for breath. The veins on his bald pate stuck out. "Hell's bells," I breathed. He looked up at me, his expression weary, and gave me an exhausted shrug.
"Don't have a gun," he panted. "Never really felt like I needed one."
"Been a while since you did that, Mortimer," Sir Stuart said from where he sat beside the wall, his body supported by the ghost-dusted paint. "Thought you'd forgotten how."
Mort gave the wounded spirit a faint smile.
"I thought I had, too."
I frowned and shook my head.
Was that a possession just now, when the ghosts took over?"
Sir Stuart snorted.
"Nay, lad, if anything, the opposite."
"Give me at least a little credit, Dresden,"
Mort said, his tone sour.
"I'm an ectomancer. Sometimes I need to borrow from what a spirit knows or what it can do. But I control spirits. They don't control me."
"How'd you handle the gun?"
Stuart asked, a certain craftsman-like professionalism entering his tone. Mort shook his head and looked at me.
"Magic," I said quietly.
My bell was still ringing a little, but I was able to form complete sentences. "I sort of bumped into him and called up a shield." Sir Stuart lifted his eyebrows and said,
"Huh." "I needed to borrow your skills for a moment," Mort said, somewhat stiffly. "Appreciate it."
"Think nothing of it," I said. "Just give me a few hours of your time. We'll be square." Mort stared at me for a while, then he said,
"You're here 20 minutes, and I nearly get killed, Dresden. Jesus, don't you get it?"
He leaned forward.
"I am not a crusader. I am not the sheriff of Chicago. I am not a goddamn death-wish-embracing Don Quixote."
He shook his head.
"I'm a coward, and I'm very comfortable with that. It served me well."
"I just saved your life, man," I said. He sighed.
"Yeah, but like I said, coward, I can't help you. Go find someone else to be your panza."
I sat there for a moment, feeling very, very tired. When I looked up, Sir Stuart was staring intently at me. Then he cleared his throat and said in a diffident tone,
"Far be it from me to bring up the past, but I can't help but note that your lot in life has improved significantly since Dresden first came to you."
Mort's bald head started turning red.
"What?"
Sir Stuart spread his hands, his expression mild.
"I only mean to say that you have grown in strength and character in that time. When you first interacted with Dresden, you were bilking people out of their money with poorly falsified seances, and you had lost your power to contact any spirit other than me."
Mort glowered ferociously at Sir Stuart.
"Hey, Gramps, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you."
Sir Stuart's smile widened. "Of course."
"I help spirits find peace," Mort said. "I don't do things that are going to get me taken to pieces. I'm a ghost whisperer, and that's all."
"Look, Mort," I said, "if you want to get technical, I'm not actually a ghost, per se." He rolled his eyes again.
"Oh, God. If I had a nickel for every ghost who had ever come to me explaining to me how he wasn't really a ghost, how his case was special,
Well, sure, I said, but... He rolled his eyes. But if you aren't just a ghost, how come I could channel you like that? How come I could force you out of me, huh?
That hit me. My stomach may have been insubstantial, but it could still writhe uneasily. Ghosts were not the people they resembled, any more than a footprint left in the ground was the being that made it. They had similar features, but ultimately a ghost was simply a remainder, a reminder, an impression of the person who died. They might share similar personalities, emotions, memories, but they weren't the same being. When a person died and left a ghost behind, it was as if some portion of his dying life energy was spun out, creating a new being entirely, though in the creator's exact mental and often physical image. Of course, that also meant that they were subject to many of the same frailties as mortals. Obsession, hatred, madness. If what Mort said about ghosts interacting with the material world was true, then it was when some poor spirit snapped, or was simply created insane, that you got your really good ghost stories. By a vast majority, most ghosts were simply insubstantial and a bit sad, never really interacting with the material world. But I couldn't be one of those self-deluded shades. Could I? I glanced at Sir Stuart. He shrugged. Most shades aren't willing to admit that they aren't actually the same being whose memories they possess, he said gently. And that's assuming they can face the fact that they are ghosts at all. Self-deluded shades are, by an order of magnitude, more common than those that are not. So what you're saying is... I pushed my fingers back through my hair. You're saying that I only think I did the whole tunnel of light sent back on a mission thing? That I'm in denial about being a ghost? The ghost marine waggled one hand in an ambivalent gesture, and his British accent rolled out mellow vowels and crisp consonants as he answered, I'm simply saying that it is very much possible. Mission? What mission? What are you talking about? I eyed him for a moment while he looked at me blankly. Then I said, I'm gonna guess you've never seen Star Wars. Sir Stuart shrugged.
I find motion pictures to be grossly exaggerated and intrusive, leaving the audience little to consider or ponder for themselves.
That's what I thought, I sighed. You were about two words away from being called 3PO from here on out. He blinked. What? God, I said, now we're transitioning into a Monty Python skit. I turned back to Morty. Mort, Jack Murphy met me on the other side and sent me back to find out who murdered me. There was a lot of talk, but it mostly amounted to, we aren't going to tell you diddly, so just do it already. Mort watched me warily for a moment, staring hard at my insubstantial form. Then he said,
You think you're telling the truth?
No, I said, annoyed. I am telling the truth.
I'm sure you think that. Mort said. I felt my temper flare. If I didn't go right through you, I would totally pop you in the nose right now.
Mort bristled, his jaw muscles clenching.
Oh, yeah? Bring it, Too Tall. I'll kick your bodiless ass.
Sir Stuart coughed significantly, a long-suffering expression on his face.
Mortimer, Dresden just fought beside us to defend this home and rushed in here to save your life.
Then it hit me, and I eyed Sir Stuart. You could have come inside, I said. You could have helped Mortimer against the shooter. But you wanted to see where I stood when I was under pressure. It was a test. Sir Stuart smiled.
Somewhat, aye.
I wouldn't have let you harm Mortimer, of course, and I was there to help him the instant he called, but it didn't hurt to know a little more about you. He turned to Mortimer.
I like this lad. And Jack Murphy sent him.
Both Mortimer and I glared at Sir Stuart and then settled slowly back from the confrontation. Head detective of the Black Cats a generation ago, Stuart continued, killed himself at his desk. Sometimes new shades show up claiming they've had a run-in with him and that he brought them back from the hereafter. And you know that he is no deluded fool.
Mort didn't meet Sir Stuart's eyes. He grunted, a sound that wasn't exactly agreement.
Or maybe Jack Murphy's shade is simply more deluded than most, and has a talent for nurturing the delusions of other new shades. Hell's bells, Morty, I said. Next you'll be telling me that I didn't even meet his shade, that I deluded myself into deluding him into deluding me, that I made the whole thing up.
Sir Stuart snorted through his nose. A fair point.
It doesn't matter, Mort said. There's no real way to know.
Incorrect, Sir Stuart interrupted. Summon him. That shouldn't be difficult, if he is just one more deluded shade. Mort didn't look up, but he said very quietly,
I won't do that to Jack.
He looked up and seemed to recover some of his composure.
But even if Captain Murphy is genuine, that doesn't mean Dresden's shade is legit or sane.
Consider the possibility, Sir Stuart said. There is something unusual about this one.
Mort picked up his metaphorical ears.
Unusual?
An energy, a vitality.
Sir Stuart shrugged.
It might be nothing, but even if it is.
Mort let out a long sigh and eyed the shade.
You won't let this rest, will you?
I have no plans for the next 50 or 60 years,
Sir Stuart said affably.
It would give me something to do, every half an hour or so.
Mort pinched the bridge of his nose and closed his eyes.
Oh, God.
Sir Stuart grinned.
There's another aspect to consider, too.
Oh?
The attack was larger tonight. It cost us more defenders. And the creature behind it revealed itself.
He gestured at his still translucent midsection. I can't keep holding them off forever, Mortimer. And the presence of a mortal pawn tells us two things. I nodded. One, the Grey Ghost is bad enough to have its way with mortals. Two, Sir Stuart said, the creature is after you, personally. Mort swallowed. I rose and shuffled over to look down at the still unconscious intruder. The man let out a low groan.
It is a good time to make friends,
Stuart said, his expression serious.
Dresden's one reason you'll live the night, and he had allies in this city, people who could help you if they had a reason to.
You're fine, Mort said, his tone uncertain. You've survived worse.
Sir Stuart sighed.
Perhaps, but the enemy isn't going to give me time to recover before he attacks again. You need Dresden's help. He's asking for yours.
His expression hardened.
And so am I.
The intruder groaned again and stirred. Mort's forehead broke out in a sudden sweat. He looked at the fallen man and then, rather hurriedly, heaved himself to his feet. He bowed his head, then he turned to me and said,
Fine, Dresden, I'll help. And in return, I expect you to get your allies to look out for me.
Deal, I said.
I looked at Sir Stuart. Thank you.
1 hour, Mort said. You get 1 hour.
Okay,
I said.
Okay,
Mort echoed, evidently speaking mostly to himself.
I mean, it's not like I'm trying to join the council or anything. It's 1 hour, just one little hour. What could happen in 1 hour?
And that's how I knew that Mort was telling the whole truth when he said he wasn't a hero. Heroes know better than to hand the universe lines like that. Chapter 7 Mort drove one of those little hybrid cars that, when not running on gasoline, was fueled by idealism. It was made out of crepe paper and duct tape and boasted a computer system that looked like it could have run the New York Stock Exchange and NORAD with enough attention left over to play tic-tac-toe or possibly global thermonuclear war.
Kind of glad I'm dead, I muttered, getting into the car by the simple expedient of stepping through the passenger's door as if it had been open. If I were still breathing, I'd feel like I was taking my life into my hands here. This thing's an egg, and not one of those nice, safe, hard-boiled eggs. A crispy one.
Says the guy who drove Herbie's trailer park cousin around for more than 10 years, Mort sniped back.
Gentlemen, Stewart said, settling rather gingerly into the tiny back seat, is there a particular reason we should be disagreeable with one another? Or do you both take some sort of infantile pleasure in being insufferably rude? Now that the fighting was done, Sir Stewart's mannerisms were reverting to something more formal. I made a mental note of the fact. The Colonial Marine hadn't started off a member of proper society, wherever he'd been. The rather staid, formal, archaic phrasing and patterns of speech were all something he'd acquired as a learned habit, one that apparently deserted him under the pressure of combat.
"Okay, Dresden," Mort said. "Where to?"
He opened his garage door and peered out at the snow. It was coming down even more thickly than earlier in the night. Chicago is pretty good about keeping its streets cleared in winter weather, but it was freaking May. From the deep piles of old snow that had apparently been there for a number of weeks, I deduced that the city must have become increasingly beleaguered by the unseasonable weather. The streets were covered in several inches of fresh powder. No plow had been by Mort's house in hours. If we hit a patch of ice, that heavy, crunchy little hybrid was going to skitter like a puppy on a tile floor. Thinking, I referenced a mental map of the city. I felt a little bad making Mort come out into weather like this. I mean, given that he wasn't dead and all. I was going to feel like crap if something bad happened to him. And it wouldn't be a kindness to ask him to go farther than he absolutely had to. Besides, with the weather worsening, his one-hour time limit seemed to put further constraints on my options.
"Murphy's place," I said quietly. I gave him the address.
Mort grunted.
"The ex-cop?"
I nodded. Murph had gotten herself fired by showing up to help me one too many times. She'd known what she was doing, and she made her own choices, but I still felt bad about it. Dying hadn't changed that. She's a pretty sharp lady, better able than most in this town to look out for you. Mort grunted again and pulled out into the snow, driving slowly and carefully. He was careful to keep his expression blank as he did it.
"Mort," I said, "what aren't you telling me?"
"Driving over here," he said. I made a rude sound. Then I looked back over my shoulder at Sir Stewart.
"Well?"
Sir Stewart reached into his coat and drew out what looked like a briar pipe. He tapped something from a pouch into it, struck an old wooden match, and puffed it to life. The smoke rose until it touched the ceiling of the car, where it congealed into a thin coating of shining ectoplasm, the residue of the spiritual when it becomes the physical.
"To hear him tell it," he said, finally indicating Mort, "the world's gone to hell the past few months, though I've got to admit it doesn't seem much different to me. Everything's been madness since those computers showed up."
I snorted. "What's changed?"
"The scuttlebutt says that you killed the whole Red Court of vampires," said Sir Stewart. "Any truth to that?"
"They abducted my daughter," I said. I tried for a neutral tone, but it came out clipped and hard. I hadn't even known Maggie existed until Susan Rodriguez had shown up out of nowhere after years overseas and begged for my help in recovering our daughter. I'd set out to get her back by any means necessary. I shivered. I'd done things to get the child away from the monstrous hands of the Red Court. Things I wasn't proud of. Things I would never have dreamed I would be willing to do. I could still remember the hot flash of red from a cut throat beneath my fingers. And I had to bow my head for a moment in an effort to keep the memory from surging into my thoughts in all its hideous splendor. Maggie, Chichen Itza, the Red King, Susan. Susan's blood. Everywhere. I forced myself to speak to Sir Stewart.
"I don't know what you heard, but I went and got my girl back and put her in good hands. Her mother and a whole lot of vampires died before it was over."
"All of them?" Sir Stewart pressed.
I was quiet for a moment before I nodded.
"Maybe, yeah. I mean, I couldn't exactly take a census. The spell could have missed some of the very youngest, depending on the details of how it was set up. But every single one of the bastards nearby me died.
and the spell was meant to wipe the world clean of whoever it targeted. Mort made a choking sound.
Couldn't... I mean...